Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, last show of the month of September.
I know.
It's the 27th.
I know. How great is that?
It's great.
I'm heading off to Vegas this week, or at the end of the week.
Oh, we going to do a show next week?
Yeah, I'll just be there for 3 days, 2 days.
What are you going to do there?
My son turned 21, and he's out there at a conference, and he told me about it. And I said, you know, while you're out there, I'm coming. So we'll spend some time. I'm actually going to a beach party at the Wynn, and David Guetta, the famous DJ, is going to be playing, and I'll be the oldest guy there.
Yeah, probably. And you bring your wife?
No.
She wants nothing to do with it.
No. It's just, Sonny Boy and myself. He's turned 21, so we're going to go party.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Well, go to the pinball museum. Go to the pinball machine museum.
I have tickets to go to the old neon sign museum.
That's different. Pinball machine museum has like 1,000 pinball machines that from your era.
Really?
And you play them. You can play them all.
I was a good pinball player in my day.
You would love this place.
I could play for hours on a quarter.
Well, you'd love this place.
What was your favorite game? Do you remember what pinball machine you liked to play?
There was a machine called Highways I was pretty good at.
Mm-hmm.
There was a machine called Hollywood, I think, something. These are very old ones before they got into the fancy stuff.
Right.
I was pretty good at a couple of machines.
I played Adam's Family.
Oh, that's a newer machine. That's one of the modern machines. I'm talking about the old ones.
Oh, the old machines.
They have those there, too. They have the new ones there, too. The crazy one. There's one there that has like six levels. Apparently, they only made three of these machines, and this guy's got one of them. Probably very complicated.
Probably too hard to get the ball going up there.
It's very difficult to do anything.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you a little bit about markets. You know, we had that big rally after we spoke last week. We saw that the Fed wussed out, couldn't raise rates. It wasn't time. It was, you know, a quarter point could really wreck the economy. And they felt that while there was a lot of things that pointed to getting a rate hike in, well, no. There was a record number of dissenters, three dissenters in the crowd that wanted to raise rates immediately. But like we talked about, it looks like they're going to follow the same playbook, at least so it seems, from last year, which was talk it up in September, get everybody all anticipated about something, and then do nothing, and then do it in December. So
we're going to do something after the elections.
Yeah. And with that, wouldn't you know it, even though the Fed talked about how they think there's great things in the economy and they're seeing a lot of growth and all that, they marked down their estimates for economic growth in the U.S. To, I think, 1.8% on a GDP basis. So they said how great things were, but yet they marked down their outlook. And for whatever reason, markets decided to move up pretty nicely for a couple of days there. But then Monday came around and U.S. equities gave back most of, if not pretty much all of, the Fed-induced rally from last week. The U.S. dollar sank, yen rallied. Yen clipped right at the 100 mark again, just a little bit over. Crude moved up, then moved down. We'll talk about that in a second. And clearly banks have been one of the worst sectors as negative rates around the world and an uncooperative yield curve seems to be weighing on them. So, where are we? So we saw a drop again yesterday. And one of the fascinating things, we'll talk about the debate in a second, but one of the things that was really interesting during debate was that there's a couple of different benchmark indices that you could have been watching live to see kind of what do the markets think about who and what and what's going on. Well, the one that was really a tell was the Mexican peso versus the dollar.
Yes, I heard that.
Yeah. And what happened was that as the event went along, more and more concern, I guess, was that Trump is not doing so well and the peso just rocketed up 2%.
Yeah, I guess the Mexicans think that if Trump gets elected, he's going to ruin Mexico, or he's going to kill the NAFTA deal, which I think they rely on. I think it's probably the NAFTA thing that's got them spooked.
You don't think the wall has them a little spooked?
I don't think they care about the wall.
No, they don't?
I think it's NAFTA.
Mm. Well,
that hurts the pocketbook. The wall doesn't. So what?
Clearly. So it did move up. We saw the yen actually also move down. So the dollar was kind of moving around. And then the interesting thing was, as the night progressed, the S&P futures started rallying pretty significantly off of the lows from yesterday into the election, into the debate. So that was kind of cool to see. And here's a couple of things. Donald Trump said, well, his strongest asset is his temperament.
Yeah, I got a big laugh.
Yeah. More than 80 million people tuned in to watch this. Which said
low.
Low. Well, that's just on the network TV. That's not including the streaming.
They kept predicting 100 million.
Right. So I think when they add the streaming, it's another maybe 5 million or so. So 85 million.
Maybe, but I don't think they were counting that to begin with.
Yeah, Twitter was...
A lot of people... I don't see how... I'm sorry. I don't see how anybody could watch... I watched the whole thing because I felt I had to, but it was a lot. I think a lot of people just turned it off. It wasn't that interesting.
Well, if you watched it for the first 10 or 15 minutes and then turned it off, you would have had a relatively better opinion of Trump than if you watched the entire episode. Because he kind of faded, as far as I could tell, towards the end. Who do you think actually was victorious? Or was
I don't think either one of them was. I think. Hillary was her normal condescending self with her smirk, and Trump was an idiot. He didn't know what he was doing, and but it's all in the eye of the beholder. Most of my work was on the follow-ups. What do people think of it?
Mm-hmm.
And you find people that were all in for Hillary. They thought she did just terrific, and people that were all in for Trump thought it was fantastic. I mean, it's ridiculous. There's nobody. There's nothing. It accomplished nothing, from what I could tell.
Did you think though that Hillary was better prepared than Trump?
That's a meme that's going around, and it's possible that she was. Then again, there was also a rumor that she had the questions in advance that were snuck to her by an intern at NBC.
Oh, wow.
That would account for a lot of that, if true.
Mm, interesting. I wouldn't put it past them, considering what...
I wouldn't put it past either one of them to pull something like that.
Yeah. So, let's talk about crude oil. So crude oil is having a big kind of... it has fits and spurts. Goldman and other analysts downgraded the demand substantially through 2017. OPEC and non-OPEC can't seem to come to any deal. Even with the recent record inventory drawdown last week, you know, we saw this major rollover because, as we had talked about with Venezuela saying one thing and then them saying another thing, and now OPEC saying something else, and this Algeria meeting they had, they can't come to a resolution, and Russia's going to continue pumping. And, with all of that, it doesn't seem like it's going to get better. And that does weigh a bit on the S&P, because you look at the earnings of the energy sector, which was expected to see a significant rebound.
Yeah.
That may not be the case.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if you've been watching Deutsche Bank.
Well, how can you not watch them?
You know, we talked about last week how the $14 billion penalty, fine, or sanction from the U.S. against them matched the $14 billion fine by the EU to Apple. And now there's some real concerns over this, that all the things that are going on. And this bank seems to be the epicenter of some really bad stuff. They've had a lot of things, haven't they?
Yeah, I agree.
They hit a all-time low yesterday. There's a chart there that shows us pretty
well. Yeah, Merkel says she's not going to bail him out.
Oh, come on. Please. You know, she says that until the time is that they'll get a bailout. We'll find out months later, by the way, there was an injection of some sort. And it will probably be something in the form of a general change in the ECB policies, or possibly even a bailout across the board, or maybe
well,
even...
if you believe that, then you should be long Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, I think that's not the worst thing in the world, even though they are problematic. This is the crown jewel of Germany.
Yeah, supposedly.
Yeah, I mean, this is what it's supposed to be. You know, they're having all sorts of problems with their, you know, they had a lot of exposure to commodities and obviously a lot of problems with some of the currency trades earlier in the year, and a variety of other things that they've done. It by the way, between Deutsche Bank and Volkswagen, you got to wonder what the hell's going on in Germany.
And I'm sure the other car makers are also cheating too.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's going on in Germany? Well, this looks like, I'm looking at the chart that you have here. I can see where that big collapse took place right after the 2007, 2008, 2009 debacle.
Right.
And that came, brought the thing down to what, 25, 22, something like that, mm-hmm. looks like. And then now it's half that. Could go lower. Could go down to $5 or $6, maybe $5, a nice buying opportunity at that spot. That would be cool.
It's amazing, though, that they're so far beneath the 2009 low.
Yes, they are way beneath it, halfway. But I'm more looking at, I'm tending to look up there at the high when it hit 150 something.
Right. 150 to 11 and a half or so.
Yeah, that's there's your short.
Yep, exactly. So anyway, Deutsche Bank is something to take a look at. You know, just to go back to the debate for a second, Twitter was tweeting today, or some report came out today, that there was the most ever tweets regarding the debate versus any other debate in history. And I'm thinking,
oh, well, how long has Twitter been?
Exactly, exactly.
They just formed around 2008, if I'm not mistaken, right. And so this is a phony report.
Exactly. You know, they come up with this. There's been a lot of things happening with Twitter in terms of rumors and
because I guess they were in full bloom during the Romney-Obama debates. I'll bet you that was packing them in. Yeah, okay.
No, jeez. I agree. So the rumors and the pump-ups of Twitter are reaching kind of epic proportions right now.
I know. It looks like, it looks like a short opportunity to me.
Yep. So here's
this deal's not going to happen at these prices.
Well, first of all, you know, there's been a lot. There's been, I don't know, throughout 2016, several different rumors about someone possibly considering buying Twitter. The same names kind of come up all the time. There's some that seem to be a better fit than others, like Google.
Oh, wait, really? Which name one?
Yeah, Google.
Google. Okay.
I mean, that's the only possible thing. It seems to fit right in their advertising process, and you know, I don't see, like, for example, one of the ones that was looking like in this rumor was Salesforce. Now, Salesforce on the news, by the way, was down 5.5%. I guess it was. And Salesforce doesn't usually move down 5% on just.
No, never.
Salesforce is down 5% with Twitter up 21%. And then we had Google in the mix, and Microsoft was now looking into something. And finally, we come out with the Monday rumor that Disney may be making a bid. I'm waiting for like something like, you know, if this kind of dies out and peters out a bit, you know, to start hearing about how now Verizon, maybe, who knows, maybe Caterpillar.
How about Ford? General Motors.
So ridiculous.
Caterpillar.
You know, when we look at some of the like Humana, it'd be good to communicate with with people. Anyway, the stock was up 21% on Friday, one of the biggest days, I think the biggest day ever on record post IPO. And stock is still stuck at what price here? Stock is at $23.75. But, you know, they keep on spinning these things with some kind of rumors. And then you see a little bit like, well, that doesn't really look like it's a fit. And there's some skepticism by the analyst community. But I guess with all the shorts that are in there, you know, it's been moving things up and nobody wants to get near this. But I don't know what price they're putting on this. You think they're going to pick it up at 25?
I don't think they're going to pick it up at all. I think this is nonsense.
Yeah. Now, Facebook, you know, I've been moaning for a long time, this whole concern about, gosh, some of these, you know, the videos and the advertising, it seems like there's a lot more than I see myself. Now, again, that doesn't mean anything, but I was always wondering about this whole thing where, you know, finally advertisers would be like, oh, enough of this Facebook stuff. We saw Procter & Gamble pull out of the targeted marketing entirely this year. And now we see this story. I think you probably found this pretty interesting, that the company, Facebook, has been overestimating and overreporting the amount of time that users viewed video ads. So they're saying it's not a material change in earnings, right? Because, you know, the couple of things here and there. But it's 2 years that this has been going on. They just caught it.
Yeah, they didn't. Well, they can't measure this anyway. It was a scamish.
Yeah, because if you just roll over, it starts playing.
The SEC should look into this.
Yep. Now, what's interesting, though, is even though, this is what I was thinking about, even though the it smells like Wells Fargo to me. Okay, so now we got all these. By the way, we're going through this: the Deutsche Bank and all the shenanigans they pull, Twitter and stuff that's going on there. Now we have Facebook, and you look at the Facebook situation. You say, "Well, it really wasn't a big deal financially." But you know what? What about all those advertisers that were like, "Hey, my God, look at these metrics these guys at Facebook have. Wow, we need to change our entire model of advertising, go into video and get that on Facebook like immediately, because look at the amount of time people spend on them. Look at the amount of videos that they run. We're going to go into videos and we're going to get into Facebook." So the even though the actual numbers in terms of revenue may be not a lot of a concern in terms of this error, quote unquote error, in their estimations and their tracking and reporting, but how many people got duped into possibly advertising and changing their advertising model because of the information they were getting?
Plenty.
Yep, exactly. So we're going to go down this list here of all these things. Now, here's another piece of news that is, you just have to wonder. Yahoo has confirmed, this was news, by the way, but then you have to listen to the entire couple of sentences here. The news was Yahoo has confirmed that a copy of certain user account information was stolen from the company's network in late 2014. Yeah. By what it believes, of course, is a state-sponsored actor.
Oh, yeah, sure. Because everyone knows the Russians, the Chinese, and the North Koreans are just really drooling to get these Yahoo names.
Right. But the question is, and what is obviously going to be looked into now, and which may hurt them in this deal, because you know what was not, this was not a, this was a material piece of information that was not revealed.
Yes, this is a real problem for them, it seems to me.
Right, and now it's 2014. This was, and it's now. First of all, one, the users weren't told that their information was possibly, hacked.
Compromised.
Right, exactly. And two, then they didn't release it, which should have been a material event that they should have released for the public, that they did not.
That, for the SEC and the fact that this is a publicly traded company.
Correct. So
they should just throw, again, where is the hard asses that want to throw people in jail?
Yep. They're not around. Nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. Now, following up on this, we talked about the whole thing with...
And by the way, just to stop,
yeah.
What about Sarbanes-Oxley?
Yeah, what about it?
That should have those... This is a Sarbanes-Oxley violation of the highest order.
Yeah, because it's because of the material nature of this information that wasn't released. And you have to wonder whether or not the Facebook situation, you know, the question is, when did they really find out about this?
Yeah.
So, you know, the same thing with this same theme here of... crude oil flipping and flopping back and forth with every comment by an OPEC or non-OPEC speaker, which has only the idea that they want to raise oil prices and really has nothing behind it. Then we got Mylan Labs, a follow-up here, that CNBC is reporting that Mylan is clarifying that the EpiPen profits are 60% higher than they indicated to Congress.
Yeah. And they lied to Congress.
Yeah.
Or she lied to Congress.
Yeah.
So the CEO.
If you see where I'm going here, right?
Yes.
Well, let me give you another one this week. The Bank of America. The SEC confirmed that Merrill Lynch agreed to pay $12.5 million penalty, $12.5 million for maintaining ineffective trading controls that failed to prevent erroneous orders from being sent to the markets and causing mini flash crashes. So another way that there's been just a seemingly lack of controls, not to mention Wells Fargo, we can go on and on with all this, lack of controls, and a duping, or as I'd like to say, that the public's been schmeckeldorfed.
Yeah, I noticed that in your title there, schmeckeldorfed.
Schmeckeldorfed.
Is that some sort of Yiddish thing? I've never heard that word.
Yeah, that's from SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, same thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's Jewish. But, yeah, I mean, the bottom line is it's a constant battle.
You know, the thing with Merrill Lynch in particular, they have a reputation for this that goes back to when I was a kid. There used to be this company called Sterling Homex. And Sterling Homex was an obvious pump and dump scheme that they had concocted And it was a company, I think there's long since been broke, since you never even heard of them.
I never heard of them.
And it was one of these scams. And Sterling and Merrill Lynch was called out for it. And it was like, oh, they got fined and all this stuff. Oh, it will never happen again. I mean, this is unbelievable to me that this goes on and on and on.
And you know what? The $12.5 million penalty that was put on them, how about any of the traders, anybody, or so maybe somebody got spooked and pulled their money out, or who knows what the reason was, that got hurt on a trade? How do they get paid back?
Well, you can always bitch to Merrill Lynch and hopefully they'll compensate you. That can't happen.
Yeah, good luck. No, but what if you're not a Merrill Lynch client? I'm saying, what if you're...
Oh, yeah, no.
Right?
Yeah, no, I'm going to say yeah, no, a million times.
Yeah.
It's a complete fiasco for those poor bastards.
Yep. And then, you know what? They're talking about clawbacks for Wells Fargo now, that the CEO may have to pay back $40 million. You know, again, this is the same kind of situation where you see some kind of a bonus that's paid on all this great service. And, you know, this goes back to, the Mylan Lab situation, which, by the way, it was very clear in her contract that her compensation was based on the increase in the stock price and the increase in earnings, which, okay, that seems reasonable. By the way.
Yeah, that's not what she said to Congress.
Yeah, well, that's what it was. And then you have Bank of America getting a $12.5 million penalty, which is nothing, for causing mini flash crashes. I mean, they should be barred for a period of time from doing business. You know, if you were, just let's put this into the same context of, if you were a driver and you repeatedly caused car crashes, not mini crashes, but car crashes, because...
It'd take your license away. If you're a baseball player and you smoke a marijuana cigarette, you can't play 10 games.
Yeah, exactly.
That takes this money out of your pocket.
Right. And it ruins your reputation. But this is kind of like tucked in behind. Schmeckeldorfed. That's what this is.
You're gonna push that one, I can tell.
Yeah, I like the saying it, Schmeckeldorf. It just rolls off your tongue.
I like saying it. It's got a good sound.
It does. It's got
rolls off the tongue.
It's got a cadence. All right, Airbnb. This is kind of interesting, I thought. It's a very small point here, but Airbnb raised $850 million in its latest funding round. So it has now a $30 billion valuation. I always wonder these companies that are like, oh, look at that company. This is unbelievable. You know, you look at the Uber and Lyft and you look at all these, wow, right? And then you're like, wow, what the profits and what this company, took in another $1 billion. Like, what do you need money for?
I said the same thing to myself when I saw this story. I thought it was 450 a billion or million.
No, it's 850 million. Some of it is some inside, or some people on the inside selling some of their shares, you know, opening up their private shares to be sold.
But, yeah.
You know, you got to wonder why they would do that if there's an IPO coming. That makes no sense either.
Yeah, that's where you make your big money, but
$30 billion company somehow needs $850 million in a funding round.
Well, that's just so people can get stock in advance of the IPO. It's a scam.
Well, once again, I'm not going to say it, but you know what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's a scam.
Yep.
Something's amiss.
Yep. Now, Square announced, you know, this is the company that has the other Jack Dorsey company that he's running. So he's halfway in, halfway out. They announced that it reduced the speed of their chip card reader by 25% from 5.7 seconds to 4.2 seconds. Now, in the days of the plain old fashioned, by the way, you know, do you remember way back when you gave your credit card? When way back, you hand your credit card over, they put it in that little machine, they smack it back and forth, right? So they get the imprint.
Yeah, which you can't do anymore because there's no raised letters anymore.
Right. So my cards have raised letters on some of them.
No, not the newest. I just got the newest card from MasterCard.
Yeah.
Those who raised letters. Hmm.
Well, they used to do that. You know, they used to.
You can't use the card. We used to call them card smashers.
Yeah, card smashers. Yep.
Can't use it.
And they didn't call anybody. They just, okay, thank you very much. That was it.
Pretty fast. That's quicker than the 4.5 seconds or whatever.
And then they started getting into the calling and getting approvals. They have approval code 372, and they'd write on there on the credit card receipt, and they'd have the carbon paper in there and give you a copy and stuff. And then we got the swipes. You go over, you swipe your card, does something very, very fast. Maybe you sign on a screen or you sign on the receipt itself, and then you're done. Now we got these chip readers. What is so difficult for these chip readers to read that takes so long to actually do a transaction?
I have noticed this as well. I'm sure most people have noticed this, that it takes forever.
You just stand there and just keeps on saying,
and then you have to wait, and then until it beeps at you. Oh, you can remove your card. Beep! You can remove your card now. It took forever.
But what is the technology differential between a chip reader and a swipe that makes it so much longer?
You know, it may be psychological, because when you swipe, and then the card's done, it goes in your wallet, boom, bing, boom. But now you stick it in there, and you got to wait. And you may be waiting the same exact amount of time, but your card is sitting there. And it seems as though you're more used to, like, swipe and you're done.
I think you
need to get a stopwatch. I know what you're saying.
So what you're saying is that the psychological is either that I'm thinking it takes a long time, or are you saying that psychologically they did this on purpose to make it look like this higher level of security?
Oh, I didn't say that, but that's a good idea. That you may have be onto something when you said that. Yeah, maybe something's
Right. They're really investigating. They're checking 75,000 different areas at once, coming back, putting it all back together, then approving it. I don't know. Seems like something's not right about this whole chip reader thing. Not to mention that
Seems to me, and I know what you're saying, it seems to me the way it should be done, you stick the thing in, it reads the chip, stores it in memory, and you get your card back. So it should go stick in. It's got to be reading fast as it can. So it's just stick in, reads. Pull card out, stick, you know, like you would a swipe. Should be right. Like a swipe.
Right.
Why is it sitting there? What's it doing?
I don't understand. And what happens if it's not approved? Is it going to just clamp my card down?
Pop a big hole in it? Do what they used to do. You know what they used to do with these those cards you got with Dish Network and DirecTV? Because I don't know if it may have been the Dish. I'm not sure. But when they changed some system, and you had to get a new card. You got a card in the mail, and you got a phone to say you got the card, and here's your receiver number. And so they tell you not to put the card in until you get a message on the screen. And so the old card, this is what happened to me. The old card stayed in there, and then, I smelled something, and it says, okay, you can take the card out now. And the old card was scorched.
Really?
They had blew up the little chip that was in there.
Oh, very nice.
And I put the new card in. It worked fine, but I always thought, I've heard about them being able to do this, which is to blow up the chip remotely. Because there was a real problem with bootleg cards, I guess, coming out of Canada.
I used to get those.
And bootleg cards?
Yeah.
Did they work?
Yeah. Sometimes they didn't, sometimes it did. But generally speaking, you got a bootleg card, you got everything.
Wow. Well, that was a problem. So I think they've changed the technology. I don't know if those bootleg cards even exist anymore. I haven't seen any advertising for them.
I haven't seen it either. I mean, there's bootleg of the cable boxes you can get. You know, you get those kind of things. They program something, or some of these other boxes that you can get that will, you know, you put on your cable and you get every channel or something like that. I guess it's internet-based these days.
Don't know.
Yeah. Well, here's a story about Apple. And by the way, if you would like to find out what we're talking about, see the charts that we have on the screen. We've got a few more charts and interesting ones coming up. Go over to dhunplugged.com, and you can see all the good things that are there, including the weekly stock picks, some Twitter feed information that's coming through. You can see the close to the pin. You can see all these things that are going on here. And there's a little donate button, which we'll talk about in a second. Here's a story. This is actually word for word a story from Bloomberg. It says, according to a guy who knows a guy, who said that he saw a report written by someone who heard it from somebody, sales of the iPhone 7 are down about 25% on an annual basis when compared to last year's iPhone 6S. This is reporting.
That's word for word?
Yep, that's a cut and paste.
Fine reporting. You have it written down here on this note. According to a guy who knows a guy who said he saw a report written by someone who heard from somebody, sales of the iPhone. I mean, are you kidding me?
Nope, this is word for word. Now, I think he did a little bit in tongue-in-cheek, because of all the different rumors that are going on.
This may be written as a satire.
Yeah. Bloomberg Gadfly. The Gadfly.
Yeah, that's what it is. There's no way that this is really a report.
But there was a discussion on, I saw a few different pieces of information about, now nobody dares downgrade Apple. That doesn't happen. But
no, that's not happening.
No, that can't happen. But there is some discussion that sales are a little bit lighter than anticipated. So we'll find out next quarter, I suppose.
I doubt it.
Yeah, it looks like there was a big demand for that whole deal. Now, if you do love the show, you want to make a donation because maybe you made some money, maybe you picked up that Sarepta Therapeutics or maybe even one of the other names that we talk about on the show, you can do so by going right to DH Unplugged and clicking on the donate button. It doesn't hurt one bit. And by the way, we will not require you to stick a card in at all. You just have to click the button, type the information in, and that's it. So don't worry if you have the fear of a chip card reader or you have a worry about a card being exploded inside your computer by maybe some organization of sorts. That is not, we do not go along with that at all. We make it easy. As a matter of fact, if you don't believe me, you should go try it.
Yeah. Yeah, check
just,
it out.
Just go try to see what happens. It's actually kind of interesting. It's very fast. You click the donate button and just pops right up. You got to check this out. All right, let's talk about the closest to the pin. So, you know, we are having the closest to the pin. We have the big, the whopper, the close to the pin cup for the Dow Jones Industrial Average.
Big
that's
cup.
What. Yep, that's coming. Where we're going to have all of the winners throughout the year as well as the winners from the latter part of the year with the Dow Jones Industrial Average. They're going to compete for the big prize, which we have to talk about eventually, what that's going to be. But it will be big at the end of the year, actually into 2017. That will run for the month of December. But we are also announcing that on October 1st, another monthly competition for the Dow Jones Industrial Average will be opening up, and you'll have about 10 days to put in your guess for where the Dow Jones Industrial Average will close at the end of the month for October. And also, we have DH Unplugged running for the stock Wells Fargo. And that's running right now. And you can see over on DH Unplugged what where you may be situated if you did play, because we have a running list of the rank of who's the closest to the pin, the price that was a guest, and of course, all the rules and all the information is on there. We give away nice shirts and some other fun stuff. All right, moving along. Okay, here. Ah, there's something I want to talk about. Let's talk about Snapchat, which, by the way, has changed their name to. Have you been following any of the news on this?
I have not. You got me flat-footed here.
Okay, so Snapchat, you know, the thing that you don't have yet.
Oh, yeah, Snapchat.
But it's a lot of fun for, you know, for us that don't require a lot to get us having fun, I guess.
Find yourself amused, yeah. Yes.
So Snapchat, I think they just changed their name of the company to, this is big, they must have paid like a few million dollars for this, but they changed it to Snap. That's it. The new company's name is Snap. Now, I assume that their product will still be called Snapchat, and they're going to try to now have other products. And what do you guess that a successful app-based, trendy social media type of company would do? Well, they probably come up with another variation or something else with that. Maybe some add-ons. No. They go right to the hardware. Coming out with their glasses called Spectacles. Now, on the heels of the disastrous Google Glass.
Yes.
Which did a little bit of, it was more of a heads-up display and virtual reality and all that, right?
It had a combination of things going on, yeah.
This is simply, it looks like a pair of sunglasses. You can see what this looks like. Click on the
Yeah, link. I've seen what they look like. Yeah, you have a picture here, too. Yeah, it'd be on the site.
They're I'm not sure. I don't know if they're not fashionable.
They look dorky.
Yeah.
Fashionable, yes. Not fashionable under any circumstances.
So they have looks like a camera on each side.
I think they're going to have the same problem that Google Glass did. People are going to assume that they're making a movie of you, even though they have two cameras, which would make a 3D movie be pretty dynamite looking. I'm sure it'd be maybe revitalized 3D again. But if I saw somebody talking to me with those things on, I'd make them take them off.
On the Snapchat site or the Snap site or whatever it is, they show people using these to make movies of other people. you know, the people skateboarding and whatever they're doing, you know, what they're taking movies of all this. Now, one of the things about Snapchat is a lot of people use it for taking pictures of themselves and changing, you know, the face or some other thing. So you can't use this for a selfie, if you will. But I don't know. For $130
That's what got me. It's pretty expensive.
This is going to be a big...
There always was, since little cameras were invented, at least for... Even when I was at Mevio, there was one of the companies over there in San Francisco were selling out their collection of these things. This was like 6, 7, 8 years ago. Of these glasses you could buy that have little cameras built into them to take movies or to take just snapshots. This is not a new idea. I wonder if they're stunned by, oh, this is a great idea. This is an old idea. And they used to be like $30-$40 for these things. Why are these so expensive?
I guess it's the fashionable statement of it, and probably because they are Snapchat glasses.
Yeah, snap.
So people are going to run out and get these for some. Again, I don't understand the reason.
No one's getting them.
Nobody's buying them. Okay. Let's see. Okay. You know, over the next several months, there's about 27 or 25 states that currently either have marijuana legalized or available for medical use.
Yeah.
And over the next several months, we have probably about upwards of a dozen or so states that will be voting.
Yes. California is one of them.
Yep. California, Arizona, Maine, Massachusetts, Nevada.
I can pretty much pick just by from the list. We should sit and predict which states will pass it.
Well, go ahead. California. Well, if California, Arizona, Maine, Massachusetts, Nevada, are looking to legalize it for recreational purposes.
Yeah, that's the legalization, the big one.
Right. Think that will happen?
I think about half of them will pass it. I think California may not. It didn't pass it. It had an opportunity before. It wouldn't do it. That can't figure out why. I think Maine will definitely pass it. I'd be surprised if they didn't. Massachusetts, probably. I'd be actually even more surprised if Massachusetts turned it down than California. I don't know about Nevada. Why would they? I don't know. Sin state, sin city. I don't know. Maybe they would pass it. I have no idea. It's interesting. At least interesting. All I know is it hasn't had the bad effects that people had predicted. It's great for old ladies and people with rheumatoid arthritis and other pain issues. I advocate people voting it in.
Well, we have a couple of several names. There's a long list of companies that are involved somehow in the industry. You know, there's companies that make lights. There's companies that make little bottles and things of that nature, various pipes and bongs and all that stuff. Some companies that are involved in it for the medical use. So in other words, you use it for a pain reliever. Some of them pretty strong. There's a couple of companies, for example, GWPH, which is GW something pharmaceuticals. It was up big this week. There was some breakthrough on one of their drugs related to, utilizing marijuana. But there's a few others in there. There's a company called INSY, INSY, Therapeutics, and Cara. So these are a couple that we should be looking at. As a matter of fact, I put a couple of these on the list. One of them, as a matter of fact, is something that we own for clients, which was up like 12.5% today.
Mm.
So these companies are starting to see some positive movement, I think ahead of all this. Now, whether or not they're valued correctly or not, I think there's still going to be a bit of a realization that if there is some of these are going to pass, that there could be some opportunity here. Not to mention if any of the drugs really do what they're supposed to do, it could be very interesting.
Well, I think this is there's two tremendous opportunities, I think, for investors in the upcoming years. I believe this is number one, the marijuana scene. What to pick is a problematic, you don't know, but there's going to be some huge winners. And I still think the bond market crashing is the other big opportunity. I'm waiting for that.
Yeah.
It just looks like it's getting more and more possible.
Especially with all the intervention by the various central banks and them losing control a bit slowly, very slowly chipping away at the confidence in the central banks. So it's not happening at all quickly. As a matter of fact, the problem is, that what may have been a big concern, let's say, pick a time, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, like, oh, look at all the debt that Japan has. Wow, that's too much. How are they going to service it? You know, they're going to have to raise taxes. Are they going to be downgraded? Or, you know, even the junk bond situation where oil prices were going down and these companies were getting slammed on their bond exposure, the bonds that they issued. They're being marked down and prices moving down on the value of them, and things are really ugly. And then all of a sudden, you know, one day everybody's like, ah, you know what? I'm going to buy them. I don't care what the company behind them is really doing financially. I don't care what's happening with the price of oil. You know, high yield bonds got killed. Well, the same thing happened because we have very short memories, it seems, as traders, as investors, and just people in general. We only want to see the good stuff. If you look at this chart that says USD / yuan chart.
Yeah.
Now, if you remember back in 2015, there was a little bit of a crash of the markets when China devalued the yuan by a couple percent. And things went a little haywire. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So this is when the yuan went to, it spiked to 660, by the way. But it really settled in about 645. Now, this is the U.S. dollar to the Chinese renminbi or the yuan. Now, what's interesting to note here is that since then, you know, everybody said, oh, you know, they're going to calm down. They're going to keep it, you know, from really doing anything. They're not going to really devalue it or do anything terrible. Okay. Well, if you just look at the chart now over time, we are way past that level in terms of the lower value of the yuan compared to the dollar. And nobody seems to be too concerned.
No.
Markets just chug along. Although
it's not the kind of fluctuations we see with the other currencies.
Right. Very, very tight.
Yeah, it's tight.
Very tight.
Although you have the chart and it made to look like it's less tight than it is.
Well, this is weekly. This is weekly moves. So you're seeing a bigger picture of all this. There was that one move, like I said, a spike and a couple other ones here and there. But generally speaking, you know, the Chinese have decided, oh, they figured it out. You know what? If we let the frog boil in water slowly from cold to hot,
exactly. Yeah.
It will be fine. Just don't throw them in a sizzling pot of oil.
Yeah.
So they figured that out. Probably with a little bit of help from the Treasury Department here, as well as other countries telling them, oh, don't do that. Let me tell you what, even though we don't like what you're doing, let me tell you how to do it at least to get there if that's where you're going.
Yeah, it's a very funny chart. Remember when this harpooned the markets.
Right, exactly. Let's see here. Okay, well, back to, let's see, travel for a second. A couple of travel and leisure discussions real quickly. Travel and leisure company AAA says it does not think that it is important to use premium gas. As a matter of fact, they said that U.S. drivers waste $2.1 billion over a year or so by paying for premium gas when the regular kind will do just as well for the car. You know, people think that, oh, I put better gas in, it's going to be much better for the car. But I guess they did studies that says it has no difference.
This is nonsense.
Why? You think premium gas is better?
Premium gas is necessary for certain engines. A high octane is required for high compression engines, especially anything of a high performance V8. You can't put 87 octane gas into those engines.
I think what they'll
knock like crazy,
right? But I think what they're talking about is those people that put premium gas into cars that weren't required.
Well, that's not what it sounds like to me. When I first heard this report, I said, "What are they want me to take my?" Old Lexus, which has a very high performance V8 in it,
mm-hmm.
and put some crap gasoline. Now, funny thing is, certain Lexuses and other high performance cars, they do have their own knock computer inside the car itself. I mean, if I put 80, I don't know if it would put up with 87, but if I put that in there, the car would adjust it would adjust for it. It would actually adjust for it and just knock my performance way down,
mm-hmm.
Supposedly, although I still wouldn't do it. I don't want my car pre-igniting. It's not good for the engine. It's really hard on the engine when you have a knock. When you hear it, it sounds like a crackle, you know, that sound. People don't hear it as much as they used to. Mm-hmm. That is a pre-ignition, meaning that the gasoline is exploding when it's not supposed to. And that puts a huge strain on the engine. It's just bad for your engine. And, You don't want that. So right. that's why you want the gasoline that it's called for. The way they presented this sounded as if you could take your high-performance V8 and put crap gasoline in it, 87 octane, and get away with it.
I think what they're saying is that, like I said before, if you don't require to, if you're not required to or need to use the higher octane premium gas, and you still do, the calculation is that about $2
billion. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. If your car is a a four-cylinder puddle jumper, and it says, it usually says it right under the gas cap, this car requires 87 octane. You're just wasting your money to put more performance in there, or higher performance gasoline in there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the way it seemed presented to me when it was presented. I think a lot of dummies will put in cheap gas when they shouldn't.
Yeah, probably. That's
sorry.
Well, I'm sure it goes. But you know what? They should have probably done a follow up to this about all the people that are that should be putting money, that should be putting higher octane into their cars, but don't, and how much savings they have that is misappropriated. You know that.
Well, you'll be saving money, then you pay for it when the engine
on the back end.
Yeah.
Now, speaking about traveling, this is pretty cool. Elon Musk has laid out a plan just recently to send reusable rockets to Mars. Did you see this story?
Yeah.
He's looking to populate Mars. This is the most impressive part of this. He's looking to populate Mars with 1 million people over time. Now, the cost will be about $200,000 per fare at first, dropping to $100,000 over time. So let's just stop for a moment. Just for a second here, okay?
You know, there are people that read this stuff and they get all jacked up. Oh, that's a great idea.
Why would, first of all, the first set of people that need to go to Mars before you can actually colonize Mars is the crews that bring the massive amount of building materials somehow to Mars. And I don't know if there's any particular natural resources on Mars that they can use to maybe
dirt
brick up something. There's not water. I don't know. So they have to bring all this stuff over there, bring the crews over there. I don't know how the crews are going to live in the meantime because they have to set up smaller and then get bigger and bigger and create the housing environment because there's no air on Mars that can be, okay? So you got to then set up an entire system to maybe Elon Musk looked past this by accident. But then you have to create the city that, if you will, with a somehow of a generating, which I don't know how you're going to generate the required power unless he's going to somehow come up with
sun
energy through solar. Yeah, so throw a solar city. And then you have to
solar city panels.
Right, solar city panels. And somehow the government of Mars is going to buy it from him. And then you're going to have this massive, gigantic housing complex. Okay, that's first. Then you bring people over. So you got to bring people over there. And then, you get the first, 150 people that go over there, let's say, in a rocket ship. How many people can you fit in a rocket ship? Let's call it 100. I don't know. Okay. You got the first 100 people that get over there. What are these people going to do? And not only that, is there a
shack?
Is there a government there? Is there rules? Is there a police force? Is there, food? I mean, would you have to bring cows over for meat or, bring over chickens? And how does that work? Not to mention that while you get there at about 67,000 miles per hour, it'll take you about 80 days to get there. Can you imagine that ride on a train for 80 days?
I like where all the poop's going to go.
Yeah, you got just so many problems. So many problems. He did say the cabins will have movies and a restaurant. 80 days. 80 days to get there. Yeah. Estimated first launch is 2030. He's going to use his personal capital to fund this, by the way.
Sure he is.
And he's looking to have several rockets that can...
Is he so hard up for publicity?
I don't know.
That he has to make this sort of an announcement?
You know, either he's going to be...
What is his problem?
Either he's going to be like one of these people that way into the future is like, oh, Elon Musk was, way ahead of his time. Just way ahead. Or he's going to be like, what was this guy thinking? You know, he's like the Etzel of our time. Well, his cars are doing well, but I'm saying with this whole space thing.
Yeah.
A million people. Now, why? Last question. Why would a million people want to live on Mars?
Elon says he wants to die on Mars. That was one of his statements. I think he should go be the first guy over up there. Be great.
I don't understand what the big deal is. It's like, okay, because I want to go to space. Well, Elon, you are in space. You're here on Earth. It's the same thing, but just over there versus over here. You're in space. You're here. You know, I mean, you are. I just don't understand. I mean, is it that we're overpopulating here, so we might as well take over another world that has climate that is just not? Talk about climate change issues, right? I mean, there is no climate there for us. People can't go outside. You're going to build what? Indoor golf ranges and have a whole entire. I mean, the whole thing is just. There really is. I mean, who owns Mars? Governments are going to fight over it. There's a lot of things that have to go into this discussion about populating another world. We can't even populate another area without major problems. Look what's going on in the China Sea.
Send a bunch of people into some of the outbacks of Arizona, New Mexico, or even Australia. There's lots of room. It looks just like Mars.
Yeah, there's the red painted desert, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of same thing.
Yep. Just close their eyes. You know what? Put them in some kind of a, say, you know, you're going to go to sleep for 80 days, and then you're going to wake up and just stick them with something and put them in.
Yeah, and then just shove them over there in the coma, Mexico desert.
And put them in the Mexico desert, wake them up.
Holy miracle, the Gila monsters. There is life on Mars.
I love it. All right, last couple things. Bloomberg is out with their 50 most influential people in the world. I wonder if... this is another problem because Bloomberg is now going to have to come out with 50 most influential people in the world on Earth and in Mars. I mean, these are just so many problems here.
Oh, look at this list.
Let's see. Is Elon Musk on there?
Now, the funny thing about these lists, I've talked about this on my other shows.
But John Stumpf's on there.
This is my, these lists, we used to do them almost every publication I've ever worked for. We've done these things. The way they work is, we got to do the 50. This would be imaginary, but this is the way it works. Oh, my God, we got the Bloomberg 50 most influential. We've got to publish it next week. What? Oh, I forgot all about that. Okay, lunch meeting. We're going to have lunch in. Everyone bring their lunch tomorrow, and we'll pick these people, and then we'll do, you know, tomorrow. We'll do it tomorrow around the table. So you get four editors around there, maybe one of the staffers, and you start just naming names. And you just put these names up randomly. And one of the things you always do is you put in silly names. You put in jokes. You put in little, because you think this is stupid to begin with. And it is. And so you put in some of the dumbest crap you can. Let's stick in. Oh, what about what's his name? Oh, let's put him down because he'll get pissed. He'll get pissed if he's number 30 after this other guy's name. Let's put, for example, Vladimir Putin, who's number 30 on this. Let's put him two below Mark Carney and Paul Tubman, who's 27 and 28. That'll piss him off. Yeah, that'll piss him off. That's the way these lists are. These lists are so bogus.
You know, now that I'm looking at this, Theresa May is number one, who is from England, the head of, you know, the whole UK right now.
Yeah, she's that influential.
Donald Trump is number two.
How's that work?
Hillary Clinton is number three. By the way, I scan this, but I don't see it. Is the 50 most influential. Where's the president of the United States?
No, wait. Clinton and Trump are tied for second.
Oh, yeah, I see that now. You're right. They're tied for second. Good point. But where is Barack Obama? Is he not on this list? Did I not see him?
I'm looking.
Yeah. Vladimir Putin, but not Barack Obama?
Okay, well, that's a nice little insult. Very funny. Ho, ho, ho.
And then you have...
Who are these? Half of these people, I've never heard of these people. How influential can they be if you've never heard of them? Who's Bill McNabb?
That I don't know. Travis Kalanick?
Oh, here they put Mark Zuckerberg he's at 39, and so they put Mark Benioff at 35. Oh, okay, that's another one.
Benioff, who is, just to let you know, the CEO and founder of Salesforce, is ahead of Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, which makes no sense. In any world that we know of.
Angela Merkel, who is the Chancellor of Germany, the Prime Minister of Germany, is 3 steps ahead of Janet Yellen. But Elon Musk is 11, by the way. So Elon Musk is has more influence, I guess, over whatever than who else does he have here? Let's see. Lloyd Blankfein from Goldman.
Blankfein.
Jack Ma, the Alibaba.
Yeah.
Carl Icahn. John Stumpf's on here. What else we got here?
I got another one for you. Where's Bill Gates?
Yeah. Warren Buffett.
Where's Bill Gates? You got Warren Buffett, number 9. How's Warren Buffett more influential than Bill Gates?
Yeah.
How's Jeff Bezos more influential than Bill Gates? The guy's going around giving away billions of dollars. He's not even on the list, but you got Mary Barra, Larry Summers, John. They put John Oliver on the list again just to piss everybody who's not on the list off. These lists are useless crap. They're used by these publishing companies just to irk people. Do not pay, just my warning, everybody, do not pay any attention to any of these lists you ever see in your entire life.
With that in mind, if you do want to see the list, you go over to DH Unplugged and piss yourself off. Just go on the bottom of the show notes for this particular episode, and you'll find this whole, it's a nice looking list in terms of colors.
It's very pretty.
Yeah, it's very pretty. It has a full rainbow effect here. You know, you go from pink to purple to green, all that. I think that's interesting. John Stumpf is on here, who is the CEO of Wells Fargo. Where's Adam? Where's Adam?
Don't see him.
See, that's where you know this is total bogus. Adam Curry's not on the list. Sheesh.
John Oliver.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and last thing I want to mention before I want to ask you what you're writing for PC Magazine is. When last night during the debate, there was a whole discussion about the murder rates are down, right? You remember that whole thing? There was a little
argument. They're up, they're down, they're up, they're down.
Well, here's a piece from the New York Times yesterday that I found. I had this kind of queued up already before the debate. Murder rates climbed significantly in 2015, they said. If you look at this chart, it's really interesting. It's a graphic of the United States and the various places that has some of the greatest gains in murders. Interestingly, of course, it was Baltimore and Washington who had the greatest increase in percentages compared to the average of the previous 3 years. So like a 20% increase in Baltimore, Cleveland 10%, St. Louis 18%. Chicago's not on here because it has so many murders to begin with.
It would skew the results.
Yeah. Now, some of the things like Orlando obviously is on here because of the mass shooting that happened. You know, various places that maybe had some things happen. But the murder rates are up significantly, 10.8% higher than the murder rate from 2014 to 2015. It's the largest year-to-year increase in the last 20 years. So I don't know what that says. We know things are not going well. We have all these shootings and stuff around.
Too many shootings.
Too many. All right, so before we get to the game, what are you writing for PC Magazine?
I'm writing a column this week that is called the Social Media Nuclear Option.
What does that mean?
It means that they've gotten social media down to such so fine an art that they can now use it in the presidential election to get one or the other candidates elected, and it can be executed so close to the voting itself that everything until then doesn't mean a thing. In the olden days, you know, things would be kind of normalized and you would have, the polls would make sense. But in this election, because social media, we have two expert groups, the Democrats and the Republicans are all expert in using social media, Trump with all his tweets, and these things are non-trivial, Hillary and Facebook and email and all the rest of it. That they can they're going to set off a bomb, a media bomb, at some point near the voting moment, and it'll be able to turn things on a dime very late. We've noticed this with Arab Spring. We noticed this with the Ukraine situation, the Maidan thing. It happened almost overnight. The Arab Spring happened almost overnight. The Umbrella Revolution in China is the best example of something that happened almost overnight, that you can turn the tides of this election quick. With a bunch of bull crap, a false story, a movie of something that shows one of the two candidates, you know, having sex with a 2-year-old or who knows. It's just there's something will happen near the end of the election that will determine the election. It'll be social media behind it. And the next thing you know, you have a new president because of it.
So the supposition here is that people are lambs that can be just herded.
Well, they can in the social media environment. Because I remember my, I talked about this on No Agenda. We had a friend over from the UK. She's a wife of a, she left her husband back there. She didn't leave her husband. But she came to do an event in San Francisco. And she stayed at the house. And every morning she would be on Facebook all day. And it was like, holy mackerel, what is wrong with this, the public that they're on Facebook all day? And I grilled her about it. She says, well, it's a way I can keep up with people I didn't keep up with otherwise. Well, you know, you're never, you probably never see these people again in your life, but you're keeping up with them. Like, it's important.
Right.
And this social media thing is a nightmare.
Well, should be interesting, at least. And, you know, it's who knows how much of a... An undertone of, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Manipulation.
Media manipulation is involved. We'll talk about that. Anyway, let's take a look at the stocks that we have each and every week. We come up with hopefully some stocks that have some interest in, but we have interest in to look at as an opportunity to play a game with, whereas we either buy or we sell or we short, we do something with them. Come up with some reasons, some ideas here, and put them on a list. You can find all the stocks that are currently in play, not stopped out, or the ones that are stopped out. On
the funny DH thing is, the bad ones we have on here are all from the same two shows, show 326 and 327.
Must have been an off week for us.
I don't know what it was.
But if we do, just to mention, if you do decide for whatever reason to utilize any of the stock ideas that we have here, do it at your own risk. Seek financial advice from a professional. And of course, if myself, John C. Dvorak, or Horowitz Company clients own any of these stocks, we will duly note it and disclose it on the page. But you can find all these, like I said, over at DH Unplugged. You have to do a quick registration. If you haven't done so already, just go do that. And you can track these in real time. Why don't you go through some of the wieners? And losers.
Yeah, I got a couple here. The top one, of course, which is the big wiener, is Barclays, which we're both in on, and is still hanging in there from June. It's up almost 20%, and that was because it was low. It was too low. It's $7, and it was a no-brainer to pick that one. Netflix buy, which is one of mine, is up. Still up. Biogen, which has I believe was shorted because it jumped too much, and it was there's another one of mine short. That's good. Shake Shack. This is up almost as much as the Barclays. Shake Shack's up 14%. This is yours, and you shorted it for a bunch of good reasons, and it's been paying off big time. Then we have a few kind of almost dead money. Definitely. Your Herbalife short is dead money. It hasn't done anything. My Chipotle short is dead money, although I still like it. Dead money meaning it hasn't moved up or down more than 1%. Penske's up, as it was expected. You have a crazy one that I was sketchy about, which is you're buying the ultra short Lehman 20+. ETF.
Well, this plays right into your bond explosion.
Yes. Well, you're shorting the bonds. I can't figure this. Yeah.
The bottom shorting. Is this. Okay. This plays into your short your bond implosion.
Right. Which has not
happened.
Yeah. I talk a big game about the bond thing, but you don't see me playing these at all.
I hear you.
Because I remember when those guys first came out, started talking about the bond crash, which means the bonds go down, the rates go up. They said that when it happens, of course, these guys were wrong because they said it was going to happen years ago. But they said one thing which I always remembered, which was when asked, when's it going to happen? They'd say, you'll know it when you see it.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen it.
I hear you. I mean, I thought it was going to start happening with the potential for a rate increase and with the problems that we've had with a lack of conviction to the central banks and how some of the bonds in various places around the world with negative yields started popping up, but they're right back down to where they were. I mean, I think the Italian like 2 years negative 0.6.
Yeah.
That's just nuts.
I know, it's wild. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Wells Fargo is up. I shorted. That was my short. And then you have Nuveen Select Tax. Oh, this is mine too. This is the one I put in as a silly lark. This is the Nuveen Select Tax-Free Income Portfolio Number 3, which is when it, the first week, it's on it for 2 weeks, and the first week it was up 0.22. Now it's up to 0.58,
yep.
And it will keep going up forever.
One of the things that's a problem, actually, I was thinking about this, is that let's just say it pays a 3% dividend. The problem is that the dividends are going to actually, you're not going to keep, unfortunately, the way this works, we're just doing prices. We're not doing total return. There's no way to do
total
it.
Total return may be better than this.
Can't do it. Can't do it on this chart, on this table.
No, there's no way we can't do that calculation because we can't bring that number in.
Right.
Yeah. But that's okay. Yeah. I'm just trying to prove a point.
Now, I have two picks for this week and maybe a third that we may want to do together. Two of them are, and I'm a little bit concerned about this first one in that it did pop up. It popped above, which is good, above its breakout level and kept on going today. Closed at about $8.62. Both of these are the 420 plays, for those of you that know that vernacular, or the marijuana plays for those who don't. Cara Therapeutics, which was up 11.5% today. I tweeted that a couple of days ago that I was watching that for the breakout.
And yeah, I saw happen. That tweet.
Yep. And NC Therapeutics, which is another one of these. It was up 3% today. It's at $12.80. So I'm going to put a 15% stop on these because they have volatility and could be up or down 15% very quickly.
And the third, I think those are good choices.
The third one is maybe. There's a maybe. I didn't put it down here, but as we talked about it, I was thinking about it, is Deutsche Bank.
Ah, yes.
Do we want to do
I'll
that?
I'll go in with that.
All right, let's go. We're going to add Deutsche Bank, symbol DB.
But you sure you want to do it now?
It looks bad.
I don't think this thing's going to take off anytime soon.
All right, so we can hold this, but let's put this as, let's keep it in the back of our minds as Deutsche Bank maybe something to look at, you know, to maybe when it comes down even more, who knows?
Yeah, I would, if we could pick up Barclays at $7.
Yeah.
It seems to me that Deutsche Bank has a target down there somewhere like that.
All right. What do you got?
Well, there's one I want you to look at and see if you see anything in the charts that might make some sense. And the reason is that there's a very peculiar insider action going on with this company. I don't know too much about it, but it's a software company called Endurance International Group Holdings. And they make application software, EIGI.
I always get worried with the word holdings.
Yeah, I do too. I don't like it. But it has a very strange chart where they had something bad happened. I haven't been able to figure out when, what, but that was back just recently. And it's just like a falling knife thing bounced off of like $6 a share. And then it's been steadily going back up. It's long since, and it's almost back to where it first dropped out. And then we had like a kind of an uptick today that was pretty noticeable.
Well, that's what today was because Warburg Pincus reported a 37.1% active stake. 37%.
Well, that's interesting because we have three directors. This is what's screwy to me is this part that I'm going to discuss. We have three directors. If I can get back to my page.
Well, you got Charles Reed. He bought.
Well, we've got Justin Sandrian, James Neary, and then Pincus. Those three, Pincus, I believe, has a seat. Somebody from Pincus has a seat. All three of them combined, they all three bought the exact same amount of shares, $8,780 worth.
Hmm.
There's something very fishy about this. I don't know.
Let's see what they do. Oh. Well, this is exciting. They're a provider of cloud-based platform solutions.
Yeah.
To help to small and medium-sized businesses.
See, this doesn't make sense, right?
The company serves approximately 4.7 million subscribers across the globe with an integrated suite of 150 products and services. It's kind of interesting that... this reminds me of that other story about that company that was busted for... They had this like search engine and they had this website and all that, but it was all garbage and it turned out to be like a $3 billion company. But anyway, the company has about serves 4.7 million subscribers across the globe, integrated suite of 150 products, website builders, domains, mobile site builders, cloud hosting solutions, premium domains, website analytics, search engine marketing, search engine optimization, email marketing, productivity e-commerce tools, cloud storage. It offers offerings include getting SMBs online, getting SMBs, which means, what does that mean? Small, medium-sized
business.
Getting SMBs found, helping SMBs grow.
Yeah, okay. You've talked me out of it.
What is this?
What it probably was what happened when it did that falling knife act in August, dropped the stock to nothing. I don't know. I wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole. Sorry.
I would like to know what the company is called. Endurance. I got to look this up. I want to see their website. If it's like, you know, Endurance International.
I'm sure that nowadays websites are pretty hard to make lousy.
Endurance International Group. Global technology and cloud base. Let's see. Okay. So let me give you a couple things first. Okay. Endurance. Endurance.com. The first thing is that their website is secure but not secure. It's partially secure. So I got a warning already on it. Okay. Which may not mean anything, but okay, whatever. Then they have our mission, our customers, press, our careers, investor relations, our company, our journey. So
our journey, it says that?
Our journey, our team, our brands, our values, our policies, our customers, our mission. So I'm sorry, but where's their product?
I'm sorry, what?
Where's their product?
They have apparently no product. This is I would avoid it. Maybe I should short this.
We
should be shorting into insider buying. See, here's what I'd have to think if I was like trying to logic this to a buy-sell decision. I don't like this kind of company to begin with. I think this is a sketchy operation from the sounds of it. They might be well run. They may be great. There may be something behind it all that's important that I should know about, I don't know about. That's very possible. I didn't know too much about Cloudflare until I actually went and visited with the company and talked to the CEO and discovered this is like a very important company and a good investment. So that's always a possibility. But when I see these guys putting all this money into it, that says to me that, and these are the directors, they have to know something. So I can't short this, even though I'd be inclined to maybe short a company like this, but I won't because it's just something going on and maybe there's going to be a big, you know, the thing may skyrocket and then maybe it'd be a good time to short it after it does that. But I can't do anything. I'm stuck. I can't logically do anything with this company.
There's 2,500 employees, net profit margin -1%, return on average. Nice. And you know what else? I'm not trying to be a jerk, but this is a web-based company, right? This is a company that is supposed to propel and help through all these different
SMBs,
things.
SMBs, right? Yeah.
On the bottom left of the website, copyright 2013. What is the deal?
Wow.
I don't understand. Seriously, I don't understand.
That's a bad sign.
The website is absolutely awful. It's like a frame in. You got to see this website. It's like a frame in on this. Like three different things. Our journey. It's all this little framing. It's like it's the crappy. Oh, look at this. Okay, this is great. I just pulled up this thing. Our journey starting with
Søren Ernst Shackleton. Shackleford.
But did you see that it came up with the HTML coding first?
I saw that. I saw the flashing going on. It was very strange. Yeah, it does that every time you move anything. A bunch of I see what it's. No, that's. I think that was something else. This is like a giant page that has been. Never mind. It's just I don't even want to have to try to explain what I think is going on here. But it's not impressive.
It's like a one page site kind of thing.
I saw
H3. I saw the H3 for heading 3 and all that in brackets.
I may have seen that too.
How could this be? Wait a minute. This company? What's the revenue? Wait, just a second. Now I'm starting to get pissed off.
Good. So I asked.
Shares 141 million, institutional market cap, 1.26 billion. That's wait a minute. This is starting to get me excited about a possible implosion here. I'm going to look into this more. Something's not right. Something gets me a little bit nervous here. Maybe I'm totally wrong about this, but something's weird.
Well, I'd like to know where Pincus is buying in.
Wait a second. Wait, this is... Now, I don't know. I'm going to have to call about this. Something's not right about this.
All right, you check it out, and we'll talk about it on the next show.
Okay, very good. Very good. Very good. All right, well, until then, happy hunting.
Yeah. Yes. And we'll talk next Tuesday.
Yeah, don't get schmeckled along the
Take your whole pile of money, put it on red.
Yeah, I will do that. Okay, right. My friend, talk to you. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.